The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Super psyched to be with you today. We have a really great guest, John Nalepa. He's a local Pittsfield resident, and he was one of the finders of something called Hill 78, which was over by Allendale School. So we'll be having a conversation with him this afternoon and about what citizen activism looks like from not too long ago. So he'll be sharing some of his story. Super psyched to have him in studio with us today. And I am your Super Waterman, Ambassador for Water, here at WTBR and WSBR, Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and super psyched to be here. We're also on 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And then you could find us podcasts on most of your favorite podcast platforms, including Apple, Amazon, YouTube, and dozens, if not hundreds more. So check it out. And So It Flows, your only show for H2O, regarding H2O, loving H2O, and all that it provides. Got some great music coming your way. Let's go see what we got lined up this afternoon. We're here in the Berkshires where it's been snowing quite a bit, although we're not going to be playing any music regarding snow. I thought that would be a little bit over the top. But we do have a little bit of Save Your Water from Mudcrutch, which includes some Tom Petty in there from their An American Treasure album. Again, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O.
Well, you're right that no one informed you. I guess I should have warned you, it's all the contest. And you said they all wanted to hide you, but when they got deep inside you, it's a big mess. And you know me better now, and you see I'm in the middle. And you don't know why or how, but you sold me down your river. Save your water, woman, I won't drink out of your stream. Well, the shouts of 1,000 disciples and the brass Winchester rifles brought the house down. And I know that it don't concern you, but life's got a way it can burn you. You lose the high ground. Know me better now, and you see I'm in the middle. And you don't know why or how, but you sold me down your river. And I'm just plain old
chest. And you know me better now, and you see I'm in the middle. And you don't know why or how, but you sold me down your river. Save your water, woman, I won't drink out of your stream. Yeah, save your water, woman, I won't drink out of your stream.
Listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I am your super waterman, your ambassador for water. Loving that blue stuff. Sometimes it's green and sometimes it's brown if you got a lazy river, and sometimes it's multiple colors. Sometimes it's aquamarine. Sometimes it's got additives that we don't want in there and it turns like purple and green and rainbow like. We'll be having that conversation a little bit later with John Malepa, citizen activist extraordinaire, put Allendale School, Hill 78 on the map for the EPA. So he'll be chatting with us in a few minutes. And he is kind of like an Aaron Brockovich for Pittsfield, although he's the alternate category of gender. And he's going to be having a conversation with us. Super psyched about that. Got some news coming your way from onewaterproject.org. They have this really cool One Water blog. And they have the first of a series, which is called War on Water, Water Pollution Legacy of World War One. Let's see if it's going to...
The legacy of mustard gas is haunting. Introduced as a weapon during World War One, it claimed nearly 90,000 soldiers. This deadly is still hanging in there, its effects linger, impacting health and the water environment, even today. In this post, we'll explore the ongoing repercussions of this toxic agent. We'll uncover the lasting scars it left behind and discuss the importance of remembering this dark chapter in H2O history. A history of meager precautions. Frederick Guthrie did not intend to create mustard gas. In 1860, the British chemist was curious about what would happen if he were to mix ethylene and sulfur dichloride. To his annoyance, the outcome was a set of aggravating rashes and blisters. Another scientist by the name of Albert Niemann reattempted this chemical mixture within the same year, and to no one's surprise but his own, he too managed to irritate his skin. 26 years later, Victor Meyer was the first chemist to synthesize a pure, more toxic version of sulfur mustard without poisoning himself. His assistant was not as lucky. Hans Thatcher Clark was the last main contributor to this gas pre-World War I development. His experiments managed to make both the gas and its creation process more efficient. Unfortunately, he did not follow in Meyer's healthy footsteps of careful precautions and found himself hospitalized for 2 months with severe burns. As to why these accredited scientists did not take more safety measures when dealing with a substance that they knew could be deadly, the world will never know. Considering that 75% of the gas main contributors severely hurt themselves with the mixture, it could be assumed that perhaps, just maybe, a governmental agency would take a great deal of precautions before introducing it as a chemical weapon. This, though, would be greatly overestimating the leaders of the Great War era. By the time it was introduced into warfare during the July of 1917, by the German army, there had been little research on the effects of mustard gas. A mistake that will never be forgotten. A history of polluted waters. It is unsurprising due to the nature of gas that sulfur mustard made its way into both surface water and groundwater. Our issues arise not on the surface though, but rather, beneath it. Typically, when mustard gas is introduced into surface water, it is quickly broken down. However, when introduced into the water table, click, according to the 2019 academic journal Global Security, Health, Science and Policy, mustard gas can persist for a long time at low water temperatures and retain blister-forming properties. As this contaminated Adam's ale makes its way into drinking wells, it risks human consumption. Consuming sulfur mustard degradation products, primarily the compound thioglycol, often leads to chronic respiratory damage, gastrointestinal damage, immune system suppression, chronic skin and eye conditions, and memory loss. Authorities tend to brush off sulfur mustard contamination concerns as the gas is only mildly soluble, meaning that the chances for it to be transferred from the soil to the water table are very slim. This, though, does not mean that it is impossible. It is hard to quantify how many individuals have consumed these toxic degradation products, as studies regarding mustard gas contamination have been few and far between. Often individuals with thioglycol poisoning are not even aware that they have been exposed to these hydrolysis products. This means that despite the slim chance of degradation product poisoning, it is still a very real, plausible threat that affects unknowing communities who have been disturbed with a lack of research on what is in, both, the liquid they drink and their own bodies. When these studies do occur, they are usually reserved for sites with a history of large exposure to mustard gas. World War I era Munster, Germany is a good example of this. According to Wikipedia, on a post about an area in Munster, innocuously, called the Muster Training Area, at the end of the war in 1918 the gasplatz held about 48,000 tons, 47,000 long tons, 53,000 short tons, of chemical munitions, several thousand tons of chemically filled captured munitions and 40 tank wagons of unfilled chemicals. These supplies were sunk in the North Sea and the Baltic. During the preparations for this there was a tragic accident on October 24, 1919. A train laden with chemical weapons and munitions exploded. Apart from the Clarkwerk factory and the power station, almost the entire facility was destroyed, a total of 42 buildings. Chemical grenades were catapulted for miles around and clouds of poison gas threatened the surrounding villages, some having to be evacuated. Many houses in the surrounding area were badly damaged. In addition to the immediate victims of the explosion, there were numerous deaths in the months that followed. As of 2015, data has been recorded regarding thioglycol in Munster's local drinking wells. A fact that would be later published by the area's newspaper. Tests for thioglycol would have never been conducted if it weren't for a 1919 uncontained explosion that happened at the location's military chemical warfare test site. Returning back to a global security, health, science and policy, this explosion resulted in the destruction of some storage infrastructure, including buildings and railway tank wagons filled with chemical warfare agents, resulting in the chemicals being released into the environment. Of course, the main chemical warfare agent discussed in this passage is sulfur mustard, YUCK. More studies must be conducted on the water quality of areas with a history of mustard gas exposure. The fact that Munster did not get comprehensive data on their drinking water being heavily contaminated for 96 years is unacceptable. The fact that other sites with similar levels of exposure have still gone untested feels like a setup for rage bait, especially when thioglycol has been found in people who have never even visited areas with this level of contamination. At the end of the day, it boils down to authorities being scared of the results that they will find. Especially since past decontamination processes have failed, take Munster's 1956 vast and expensive attempt to clean up their previous chemical disaster, an attempt that 2015 study clearly shows to have failed. But, as a society, we no longer need to fear the possible results as they no longer remain unfixable. With modern-day solutions, we have a chance of restoring our water to a purified state. A modern-day solution: there are two main processes to decontaminate such chemical warfare degradation products. The first step is neutralization, which according to the ACWA's Assembled Chemical Weapons Alternatives website, the process proceeds with the mixing of the heated contaminated water and a caustic solution, producing hydrolysate. It had a high pH, so acid was added to reduce the pH to neutral, making it suitable for digestion by the microbes used in biotreatment. The next step, the second, is a process of bioremediation, in which microorganisms digest the degradation products into less harmful compounds that can be consumed by humans without adverse effects. The only downside to this is that there is no way to completely repurify the water table. However, through periodical testing of the table at known exposure sites and by setting up treatment processes before it is used as drinking water, we will slowly recycle contaminated water, replenishing our clean water sources, all while replenishing the health of affected communities. Let us know what you think about the war on water and the environment in general in the comments, and feel free to share about this story. Watch the ecological consequences of conflicts, World War I, 1914 to 1918. We explore how one of history's deadliest wars left scars. Not only
you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We got some background ocean sounds. It looks like the ocean stopped for a while, but it actually didn't. Because for some reason, we're going to get this baby moving again. We got some ocean background sounds. Oh, there they are. There they are. What's going on? It seems to have a problem with the CD player, but don't you worry. We got some more coming up for you, some more music. But first, a little bit from a friend of mine, good friend of mine, and it is the Water Boy. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O.
H2O.
Gatorade.
H2O.
Water sucks. It really, really sucks. Water sucks.
Oh,
it really, really sucks.
You don't mean it.
The ship was a belly of tea. The winds blew purple, the burn of below my belly boys blow. Was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was a belly of tea. The winds blew purple, the burn of below my belly boys blow.
Soon may the weatherman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. The weatherman come, they bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
She had 2 weeks from shore, and then under a right whale bore, the captain called all hands and swore
he'd take that whale in tow.
Soon may the whaleman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tumbling is done, we'll take our leave and go.
Before the boat had hit the water, the whale's tail came up and caught her hand to the side, her pinned and fought her
when she died down low.
Soon may the whaleman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tumbling is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the whaleman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tumbling is done, we'll take our leave and go.
Let's go surfing now, everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Mama is half a country away, and I am newly adult, so I wash grapes, measuring salt by eyefuls to baptize them in cold tap water brine. I rinse, then peel quickly, discarding the skins, shiny from juice and curved like fish scales. I pile their peeled green bodies. I drain the kitchen sink sea. Without the skins, my teeth meet no resistance. I eat the globes one at a time, my tongue a patient destroyer. When only my hands could reach above the table, I had grabbed grapes in handfuls. I thought of them on the vine, naturally bunched, naturally bountiful. Now, with each burst, I think of bodies growing on distant soil, skin that has withstood salt and sea, the globe that Mama's hands nestled between my teeth.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. Super psyched to be with you. I am your Super Waterman, Ambassador for Water, And So It Flows, the only podcast dedicated to H2O and all it provides here at Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, and 88.1 WSBR Lee, and anywhere you find your podcasts, over any channel, just look for And So It Flows. Super psyched to be in studio with a friend of mine and a real hero to our area. And his name is John Nalepa. John, why don't you say hi to our water-loving listeners around the world?
Waving at you. Waving at you. Waving at all of you.
So, John, why don't you share a little bit about who you are and kind of what got you in this kind of a surprise part of your life?
Well, I moved up into the Berkshires in the late 80s, starting a family, coming from down in the depths and shallows of Long Island. And started a catering business, which was pretty interesting in itself. Kept me pretty busy. But amongst being really busy and enjoying the area, no doubt, I bought my first home. And it was over on Connecticut Ave, right next to Allendale Schoolyard. Back in 1990, I believe. I think it was 89, 90. And it was right before they started building Altresco, which is the cogeneration plant, right next to Allendale School. And when I first moved in, some neighbors had said that there seems to be a problem with the schoolyard. When it rains, there's like all this oil slick in the by the monkey bars and swings. So a few of us sort of swung into action, and we investigated and found out since ended up Allendale School on Connecticut Ave was built on a hazardous waste site, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the short of it.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I'm going to just allow people to pause on that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot to...
A lot to take up.
You know, like, to take in.
What? Wow. You're a musician. I'm sure you actually had a band called Hill 78.
We did. We did back in the late 90s, mid 90s, actually.
And this, you know, it's really, you know, about consciousness and the opportunity to... you know, the cleaning out of closets sometimes is a good thing.
Yeah.
And especially because then you look at the closet and you can see where everything is. Now, when you found out about this Hill 78, which, and folks who are not familiar with Hill 78, just do yourself a search, Hill 78 Pittsfield or Hill 78 Allendale School. It's an elementary school, kids, and they're playing in a schoolyard with monkey bars.
But there was a chain link fence separating them from Hill 78.
So oh, okay.
Everything was okay with that, you know.
Uh-huh.
The kids couldn't go play on the hill.
Nah,
so Hill 78 ends up being one of the most toxic spots in all of the country, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It was the recipient of... decades and decades of dumping by different entities, different companies.
Yeah.
That set up shop in Pittsfield in the late 1800s, right into the, you know, mid 1900s.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like kind of a relationship to earth and water is kind of like, what can we hide there?
Yeah. It was a swampy area, that whole area. I saw old pictures from like the early 30s before they built the school there. And that whole area was just a swollen, you know, swampy area on both sides of the train tracks, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And that has on some level been addressed. And then there's some that still needs to be addressed. Now, when you find this out, we're talking about the 90s, early 90s. You find this out, and you organize a group of neighbors, friends.
Yeah.
What was it like to be the first one out the gate with this information?
Well, back in 91, when everything sort of really surfaced, regarding the extent of contamination, which it took the neighbors to actually make that happen, because we had a petition, we had 862 signatures, whatever that said to the, it was petitioned to the mayor and city council to have the schoolyard tested, which would be the normal recourse if you have a bunch of people petitioning that it be tested because we are suspect that there's something out there. And they, you know, the mayor Witkowski at the time refused to have it tested. So me and two other neighbors who lived right alongside the school also took it upon ourselves, this is in the winter, to go out and literally with ice picks and shovels and pick hammers, pick through the soil, and get on, you know, because it was a cold winter and there was a lot of snow that year, and take some soil samples. So I got in touch with some labs and find out what protocol was to get reliable sources of, you know, to be tested. And, you know, we did all that. And like 2 days later, I remember after that happened, and, you know, we went into the schoolyard, I think it was in the late afternoon, early evening, and dug some holes, yeah. So the mayor calls me a couple of days later and says, Mr. Nalepa, I heard that you were defacing public property and trespassing on public property after hours. And I said, well, if it's regards to getting some soil samples to see what's going on in the schoolyard, I said, yeah, we did dig some holes back there because, you know, I presented you with the petition and you failed to have it tested, so we took it upon ourselves. So I said, you know what, you know where I am, you've got my phone number, send a couple of cruisers down, have them pick me up, arrest me for these infractions, and I'm sure the 862 people that signed the petition would be more than happy to bail me out of jail. So she yeah, labeled me a wise guy after that interaction, and the rest is kind of history. So we then, what happened was a lot of things snowballed. I started getting calls from people in South County, other activists, environmentally minded people. Chris Hodgkins, one of the only politicians locally that was putting GE's feet to the fire as far as this was going. The PCBs are the issue we're talking about. GE was the, you know, they were the polluter. So it, realizing the extent of PCB contamination, it wasn't just isolated to the schoolyard. They had polluted the aquifers that we get our water from. The aquifer that was supplying over 1.7 million gallons a day to that hydroelectric plant, not hydroelectric, but cogeneration that used, made steam and burnt coal as well as oil, I should say, oil and gas to create, you know, energy. And they ended up, yeah, building that, and, yeah, they sort of didn't, they weren't too worried the fact that we had these glacial, ancient glacial aquifers that were contaminated. And that's sort of the situation that we're left with today. You know, it's as we've learned, it's, to some extent, you can clean up waterways, surface waterways, but when it comes to something that's 2,000 feet down in the ground, 1,000 feet, whatever, it's very hard to reclaim it and make it pure again. That's like impossible.
Yeah, there's I guess one of the things that folks who are just tuning in, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. We're here in the heart of the Berkshires on Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, and then 88.1 WSBR in Lee. We are mixing here culture and music and straight talk regarding water from multiple different angles, not just the environment. And today it's about the environment. Talking with John Nalepa, one of the people who organized finding Hill 78 at the Allendale School and having a conversation with him about what that was like. Now, during that time, what kind of, other than that little, you know, hey, bring the cruisers over, take me in, was there any other kind of pushback from neighbors or from business interests or from political space? What was that like?
There were some industries, like the real estate industry, was very worried about what was going to potentially happen.
Yeah, sure.
Happen.
Yeah, I get it.
They were worried that they were going to redline areas that would be essentially unsellable land, brownfields, they call it.
Yeah.
And that was a real concern from the real estate industry. GE, meanwhile, they continually denied it, that PCBs, number one, are cancerous. And it's not just about causing cancer. Some of these chemicals, these forever chemicals, they're endocrine disruptors. So they do mess with not only enzymes that are excreted from your body and hormones. They really create havoc in different ways too. It's not just cancer.
Yeah, there's a 2007 report I found, a PDF of developmental issues that were caused in 2007. That report was written, not easily accessible, and you know, I have the PDF. There's a lot. It's not, you know, cancer is the easy one to point to,
right.
And there's other things like Parkinson's and dementia and lots of other things that can show up.
They were saying the type 1 diabetes is one that, diabetes, the one that's actually usually through, you know, genetics, you get from mom and dad or aunts or uncles or whatever. That's one thing that has been one of those. It's like being an endocrine disruptor.
Yeah, and
it
it's
messes with different systems, and that is one of them.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's one thing to see that it's happened. It's another thing to deal with the consequences, and it's another thing to see light at the end of the tunnel. And
well, at this point, the question was like, you know, what was the pushback? GE actually was taking out full page ads on Sunday, spending tens and tens of thousands of dollars
in the Eagle, or
in the Eagle.
All right,
stating that PCBs, there's no proven. They really, that was a big pushback, and it really sickened people. It made people really like. This is back in the early 90s, when environmentalism and. Partially because there was only a few networks to get news from back in the early 90s, not like today, where you have multiple hundreds of news outlets where people get their information. Of course, you always have to consider the source when you're listening to information that's coming from you out there. And that in turn has really diluted the situation, and it's diluted the message. You know, corporations love the dilution. They've always said dilution is the solution to pollution, but actually not having something in the environment in the first place is the way to, is the preventive measure.
Yeah, that is.
Not to remediate after you've already contaminated.
However, it does pose quite an opportunity for businesses and others who, scientists, folks who are interested in how to figure things out, because you know, it, from my perspective, it's not impossible to clean things up that we messed up, from relationships to closets to checkbooks to cars.
All fixable.
It's you could clean things out, and if we had that talent and we can reproduce that talent, wouldn't it be great? Because then you're talking about a perpetual economy. There's been conversations of revitalization for many years, many decades here. And when you look at the root of the word revitalization, it's vita. How do you get alive again? And given that General Electric has this bring good things to life, mm-hmm. beyond toasters,
yeah, man.
Beyond a toaster or an oven, General Electric could actually take on bringing rivers, brownfields, other places back to life. And wouldn't that be an economic benefit? Yes, something did happen in the past. It doesn't mean that you have to be on the defensive all the time. You can actually take on, how can we get this thing clean? And give everything a really multitudinal, is that even a word? Give a way to have people really buy into this is now clean. And that being said, it takes something. Yeah, it takes a willingness to look at. So you were talking about some pushback.
The pushback was real. Some politicians also definitely were, you know, they were worried about the repercussions of an area being declared so highly contaminated, you know.
Yeah.
So essentially, they haven't said it, like, or told people, but there's warnings up and down the river on flagpoles, on, or I should say, trees and utility poles saying that you shouldn't be eating any fish in the river.
Yeah.
Not even swimming in the upper reaches of the Housatonic because of the contamination from PCBs. And granted, PCBs have not been dumped in 40 years, per se, but they're still...
They're there.
In levels that are still unacceptable.
And polar bears have PCBs in them. According to some friends of mine who work with the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater...
Well, that just proves the point that they are migratory and they get into the atmosphere and they end up in areas like far-reach areas like the Arctic.
Yeah.
Hence polar bears. And that's the reason why they started becoming outlawed, along with DDT in the late 60s.
Uh-huh.
One of the reasons why they were freaked out by polar bear infancy, them not making it, you know, and there's like this, polar bears have freaking PCBs in them, you know, it's like, how did they get there? Well, they weren't actually dumping PCBs up in the Arctic, but PCBs are a volatile organic compound, and they, because they're chlorine-based, they get heated up, and they get percolated into the air, literally.
Yeah.
So, and once they're in the air, of course, they're into the jet stream and the condensation of water, and all of a sudden it's raining PCBs, literally. You know. So.
Yeah, and I get it, and we're all kind of part of that system, and
that's why to get back to the point to where there's a lot of companies and a lot of businesses that could be born out of the need to clean stuff up. But the fact is, you're never going to get everything out. And still, the best way is to prevent it from being in the environment in the first place.
Yeah.
Because it's been now years and years, and corporations really haven't cleaned up their act, per se. The end pipe solution seems to be abated, where you have sewage going into waterways, and you have end pipes from manufacturing plants ending up in rivers and streams. That, for the most part, has been abated, but there's still that thing that gets evaporated into the air and gets dumped on soil and dumped into watersheds that end up picking up and having concentrations of the new PCBs, the PFOAs, and everything that they represent, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah, it's whole. And one of the things that I have a friend who runs a group out in Westfield, and they had a huge PFAS issue. Yeah. And they, one of their members is a scientist who speaks to, not only do we have to detox the environment, but we want to get better at detoxing ourselves, and what's that going to look like?
Point.
Because it's a kind of a, you got to let the through line get it out of our system, and how that's going to happen. And you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I'm your Super Water Man, Ambassador for Water. We're here at Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM, 88.1 WSBR Lee, and anywhere you find your podcast, anywhere, just check for And So It Flows podcast. One of the places I wanted to speak to, we got about another 5 minutes for this portion, is what do you think, you know, you have somewhat of a bird's eye view of some of the environmental movement, but before I go into that, did you ever have a chance to sit down with representatives from General Electric, and what was that like, if it happened? Did they ever, like, have a sit-down with you, or just, like, invite you in to have a conversation?
When we started, of course, engaging in a more organizational way, when we formed the Housatonic River Initiative.
Tim Gray and company.
And then there was, you know, at the same time, well, not at the same time, it was a little later, you had the faux environmental group, I call them the faux environmental group, BEAT, which really didn't represent at all what is good science, because, you know, they were proponents of incineration as a, you know, a way to fix the solid waste problem. They also were negotiating with GE, also sitting at the table, and not being the strong proponent of taking the higher ground.
You know, totally.
So we were, as we organized and became more an organizational group, we did, we sat at the table with GE. We were privy to that, you know. We were third parties, so to speak, between government, us, and GE.
What do you think about the rest of River Agreement, which is this agreement to clean up the rest of the Housatonic? What do you think about that?
Well, any cleanup is good. Don't get me wrong, but to take the results, or to take the sediment, the contaminated sediment, and to put them back locally into a local landfill, which is the proposal in Lee, is kind of ludicrous, especially if it's upland or upstream of the river.
Yeah, and it's up on a hill.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, a lot of these things are structured so they don't supposedly break GE's bank or bankrupt GE, but you got to realize GE is the largest multi-international corporation on the planet. They are bigger than most countries.
They're large.
They're huge. So they would, to bankrupt them would be tough.
I think the tech companies, some of the tech companies are a little larger, and they are one of the early industrial tech companies.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And,
but they also have, they're into 100 different types of businesses, too, with all their umbrella companies.
For sure.
And they have remediation companies. They've developed that, too, but they seem to be falling short of going towards that. And again, to 100% remediation is kind of, it's not possible. Theoretically, it's just not possible. But they are involved in some of the remediations to mitigate, you know, some of the contamination in the soil and sediment and in the waters. But they seem to be falling short of being a little bit more
on edge and creative,
right?
Yeah,
They seem to be relying on landfilling and some of the, I call it Neanderthal.
It's methods. Like STEM versus STEAM. The missing part is a little bit of a...
Very, very much so.
You know, the creativity of magical thinking, you know, being able to get outside the box.
That's where these new companies and new technologies will hopefully maybe spur some of these some of these things that are going to clean things up.
Can we get as good in cleanup as an Etch-A-Sketch?
Yeah.
You know, you don't like what you created, you shake it around, and boom, you got brand new again. So clean the slate, and that's really where I'd like to complete this. Now, you're also playing musically. You got a band going out
there. Yeah, I do play in the area quite a bit, actually. I'll be at Methuselah the second Saturday of every month for the next upcoming year. Different areas.
You're actually, you know, one thing I'm really happy about, you decided to participate in something called Bringing Water to Earth, something called the, what is it, Bounty Fair Waterganza Open Mic. Kind of extravaganza for water, and that's going to be on Saturday, April 12th. So psyched for that.
Yeah.
Get some of that reignition of the Bounty Fair environmental and community love that goes on there all the time.
Bounty Fair is a very good venue for events like that.
And that's going to be part of a group of events called Bringing Water to Earth. More to come on that. Another person I spoke to today, she's going to be participating. She's the owner of Future Labs Gallery up in, she runs it up in North Adams. And they're actually kicking off the whole 30-day series of events with a Water for Peace art show.
Nice.
And that's going to be cool. And it's going to end up with a national summit for water at the Zion Lutheran Church, and I think you're going to play a part there. You're going to be somewhat of a, what I call it, there's a keynote speaker, but you're going to be the keynote band, so that's going to be fun. And looking forward to have more. Anything you wanted to share more with folks who are, like, finding out their neighborhood is dealing with water issues? Like, what do you have to kind of, like, impart?
It's never too late to get involved, and water is going to be one of the biggest issues in the upcoming 30, 40 years. It's going to be all about water. Yeah. So don't be afraid to speak up either, and to speak your mind, whether it be at a city councilor meeting or a letter to the editor in the Eagle, or just calling up your representative or your, you know, politician in Washington and tell them where you stand on fixing the water situation.
Yeah, for sure, because what Pittsfield happened here is happening now all across the country.
Yep.
And just thanks again, John, for joining in. So It Flows, your only show for H2O. You know, I bow in your presence for really the work you've done. And, you know, thank you for leading the way for other, you know, citizen activists to show up at the table.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. And be well. We got some more music coming your way. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O here, WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. And you're going to find a whole bunch of other stuff. Got a little bit of Linda Ronstadt coming up right now with Blue Bayou.
I feel so bad, I got a worried mind. I'm so lonesome all the time. Since I left my baby behind on Blue Bayou, saving nickels, saving dimes, working till the sun don't shine, looking forward to happier times on Blue Bayou. Blue Bayou, where the fox are fun and the world.
sails afloat. If I could only see that familiar sunrise through sleepy eyes, how happy I'd be.
Is better than anything they got up there. The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you. What more are you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea. Down here, all the fish is happy as off through the waves they roll. The fish on the land ain't happy. They saw 'cause they in the bowl. But fish in the bowl is lucky. They in for a worse of fate. One day when the boss get hungry,
yes, you go beyond the pay.
But go under the sea, under the sea. Nobody beat us, fry us, and eat us in fricassee. We what the land folks loves to cook. Under the sea we have to hook up. We got no troubles, life is the bubbles. Under the sea,
under the sea,
under the sea,
under the sea.
Since life is sweet here, we got to be here naturally. Even the sturgeon and the ray, they did the earth start to play. We got the spirit, you got to hear it under the sea. The newt play the flute, the cop play the harp, the players play the bass and they sound the chop. The bass play the brass, the chub play the tub. The flute is the duke of soul. The way he can play the names on the strings, the chub rocking on the blackfish, he sings the spelt and the sprat. They know where it's at, they know that blowfish blow.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled. See, you in trouble. Water, water. In the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.